And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
Tickets for IU basketball are available online at iuhoosiers.com or by calling 866-IU-SPORTS. The three remaining winter break games are December the 18th against Fort Wayne, December 21st against Tennessee Tech, and December 28th against Youngstown State. IU basketball tickets make for great holiday gifts. Be sure to visit us online at iuhoosiers.com or get your tickets by calling 866-IU-SPORTS. Go IU!
Hello there. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I reconvene to look back at the last three games that Indiana has played since we last talked to you here on Podcast on the Brink. The Duke game, the Iowa game, the Michigan game. What did we learn, big picture, about this team? And what did we learn specifically about some individuals like Juwan Morgan and Colin Hartman and Al Durham and others? We also, of course, talk about the decision by Curtis Jones to transfer and what that means. And then we look ahead to the Louisville game, which is coming up next for Indiana. All of that and more coming up here on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. Like most sports fans, you've probably found that buying tickets to sports and concerts too can be a complicated process. But here's the thing, there is a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events because with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can actually buy or even sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. And there is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. In fact, SeatGeek helped me get closer to the action last season when I saw Yogi play here in Dallas. I'll probably go see him again this year. And same thing for my wife this offseason. I got her concert tickets as a gift, and she really enjoyed it. And we did it all with SeatGeek because SeatGeek is designed to make the ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find you amazing deals. Now, here is what you should do next, because best of all, Podcast on the Brink listeners actually get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So there's that little bonus. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK today. That's promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And I'm joined this week on Podcast on the Brink by Alex Bozich. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific, Jared. Always fun to chat, just the two of us.
Yes. Yes, it is. You know, and let's talk about these last three games that Indiana has played, the first three games in this kind of five-game gauntlet, how it's been termed, that we all kind of looked at the beginning of the season and really wondered how Indiana was going to fare. And obviously there was some optimism about how Indiana might be able to do after their performance in that Eastern Michigan game. And, you know, now as we look back, Indiana goes 1-2 over these two games, two of them obviously Big Ten games. And so obviously that's a little bit disappointing when, you know, you drop two games. But as I kind of reflect on it, I feel like there was more good basketball played than bad, certainly the first 35 minutes of the Duke game. And while Indiana didn't win that game, as Archie has very emphatically reminded us, I do think that we learned some positive things about the team, despite the disappointment of losing. Then obviously they basically lay an egg at Michigan, which was disappointing, although somewhat predictable, given how obvious of a letdown spot that was. And then, you know, for the most part, played pretty well in a victory over Iowa. And so I'd love to just get your overall thoughts on what are kind of some of the big picture lessons you feel like you learned about the team over these three games and how you feel now coming out of them with two more big ones coming up against Louisville and Notre Dame. And if Indiana showed you anything over these past three games that gives you some positive feeling that they can compete in a road and a neutral environment against, you know, a couple of top 25 teams.
Yeah, I mean, the three games so far, I think really kind of went according to script, with the exception of, I didn't necessarily think the Duke game was going to be as close as it was. I mean, it was a 10-point final margin, but really it was a much closer game than that. And then the Michigan game, I was a little surprised at just how, I don't want to say lifeless, but just how Indiana came out with such a lack of focus and lack of ability to just to really even stay in the game from the get go. I mean, I know they got it down to 5 points in the second half, but it just felt like a game where they never really challenged Michigan. So, I'm not surprised at the 1-2 record. And I do agree with you, Jared, that for the most part, there was really some really positive things to take away. I'm sure we'll get to Juwan Morgan, but I think he's kind of emerging at this point as the closest thing that Indiana has to a go-to guy offensively. I think Colin Hartman obviously was, a positive in the Iowa game after really struggling at Michigan. Same thing goes for Deron Davis, playing a lot better in the Iowa game after no showing at Michigan. But to answer your question, about if it gives me any hope or I guess optimism as to whether Indiana can compete in the next two games, I would say I'm still pretty unsure about that because, as Archie Miller said last night in his postgame press conference, Indiana's failed its first two tests away from home. I mean, they lost at Seton Hall, obviously, by 16 points and then got beat pretty soundly at Michigan as well. And so there's not a body of work to point to that says Indiana can compete. I wouldn't say compete, but there's not a body of work to point to that says Indiana is going to beat a good team away from Assembly Hall at this point. And so, do I think there's a chance they could win one of those two games? Absolutely. But at this particular point, based on what I've seen the last three games, I would not be particularly confident in making that prediction right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you look at how the schedule lays out. Obviously, Louisville coming up next on Saturday and then Notre Dame after that. And then you come back home for three games that certainly all of those are games that you would assume Indiana will win against Fort Wayne, Tennessee Tech, and Youngstown State. And then you resume Big Ten play with two more tough road games against Wisconsin and Minnesota. So certainly Indiana has failed their two road challenges so far this year, and they're going to have to get that figured out unless they want to pick up four more losses here before the second week in January, because all four of these games they have coming away from home are going to be difficult. So, as we look at, what can Indiana build on to start to have some success in these types of games, you mentioned Juwan Morgan, and he has clearly become, this team's go-to player. And I don't know. Maybe you're like me. I still kind of shudder every time he hits the deck. I feel like we've been conditioned to kind of expect injury with him and, knock on wood that he can stay healthy, because my goodness, if he can, he's really showing what kind of player he can be. And I shudder to think what this team would look like without him. And I actually feel like we got a bit of a taste of that at the beginning of the second half against Iowa, when Iowa basically erased that 15-point lead in no time, because I thought Juwan probably played three or four of his worst minutes in that stretch. He was, missing rebounds. He, airballed a shot that was pretty close. He looked a little out of sorts. And then all of a sudden, it's like, he flipped a little bit of a switch out of the under 16-minute timeout and went and got the ball down low, hit a couple of free throws, got an and one, scored those 5 points that kept Iowa from taking over. And then it's like everybody else followed his lead, and Hartman hit a three, and Indiana gets going, and they go on, whatever it was, a 29-9 run and push that out. But it was yet another moment, and there have been many of them in this early season, where Juwan Morgan took it upon himself to get something going offensively, to get a big rebound, to get a block shot, to make a play, to build some momentum for his team. And, to put his recent play in context, at KenPom, there's a game MVP for every game, and it takes into account both teams. So it's the true game MVP, not a team MVP. And in four of Indiana's last six games, South Florida, Arkansas State, Michigan, and Iowa, Juwan has been the game MVP, the best player on the floor. And for a little context there, Yogi Ferrell's best stretch was three times in six games. So any way you slice it, this has been a really, really impressive stretch for Juwan Morgan, kind of fulfilling some of the promise that we've all seen from him in the stretches where he's been healthy. And I think of all the positives to me that have come from this recent stretch of basketball for Indiana, and we'll get to some of the other ones, I think Juwan's emergence as a confident guy who, like Archie said, is really playing to script. He's not trying to do things that he can't do. He's not taking as many threes anymore. He's really playing within himself and showing just how varied of a game he has and how important he is to this team.
Yeah, I thought South Florida's coach, Brian Gregory, made a pretty good point after the game that Indiana played against them. You know, I think he said something to the extent of, you know, they don't really call anything for Juwan Morgan, but he still goes out there and, you know, produces offensively. And I think that kind of speaks to, you know, his mentality on the court. I mean, he's not a guy that necessarily needs the ball to be effective. I mean, he's, as you mentioned, going up and getting offensive rebounds, second chance points. And the other thing that he's really doing well is getting to the foul line and making his attempts. I think he's shooting a 78%. I know he has the highest free throw rate on the team, which I guess in Deron Davis's case could be a bad thing. If, you know, free throw rate doesn't mean a whole lot necessarily if you're not making free throws. But in Juwan's case, he's doing a really good job of not only getting there, but converting. And, you know, Archie, I agree with what he's saying in terms of kind of, you know, embracing his role. Juwan doesn't really try to get outside of the scope of things that he's good at. You know, he is struggling on his 3-point shot so far. I think there was one last night that he airballed or something. It was just really off. I know he's 1 of 10 on the season, but overall, I think he's been really good defensively, particularly around the basket. He's not the biggest guy in terms of his height, but I think he does a really good job of using his instincts to block shots. For the most part, has avoided foul trouble. And like I said earlier, he's the closest thing right now to a, I guess, consistent offensive threat that Indiana has. And that's, you know, I guess a good thing and a bad thing, because they don't really do anything in terms of running plays for him. I mean, he obviously gets some post-ups and things like that, but it's not like the offense is featured around him. So you kind of wonder what this team's upside could be if some other guys start making 3-point shots. Last night we got a little bit of a glimpse of it when they shot better, 8 of 21 on threes, as opposed to 7 of 28, I think, the previous two games. And so, you know, I think he's a guy who's going to continue to be steady and consistent, but I think it kind of puts a little bit more, you know, an emphasis on the guys around him are going to have to step up, because if he's going to be the only guy who's consistent, eventually he's going to become more of a focus of the opposition's scouting report, and things are going to get even more difficult for him. So I think it's been encouraging to see Juwan stay healthy, be out there, you know, be an energy guy, be a leader on the court. And I'm just intrigued to kind of see where the season goes for him, and maybe if some of the guys around him can step up, and so he doesn't have to carry such a big load offensively, like it feels like he's been doing the last couple games at least.
Oh yeah, no question. I mean, and his statistical profile is just so balanced. I mean, he's in the top 150 in the country in offensive rating, in true shooting percentage, in offensive rebounding percentage, in block percentage, in free throw rate, in 2-point field goal percentage. And I mean, that's taking into account all the players in the country. Those are phenomenally balanced numbers to be doing all of that, as he is at 6'7", and again, being asked to carry so much of the load. So that to me has been a huge development. You know, Juwan Morgan basically becoming an all-conference type player, which if he keeps this up, he certainly will be. You know, and the other thing, Alex, that I think has kind of gone under the radar a little bit is that Indiana's playing better defense. And it's still, you know, if you just look at the overall rating, like if you look at the KenPom rating, Indiana's 179th in the country. That certainly doesn't seem very good, and it's not, although it's a little better when you consider they were in the 200s pretty recently. But I thought the defense was better against Duke, even though it didn't show up in the numbers, because, I mean, look, Duke is just so supremely talented offensively, even against a really good defense, which Indiana certainly is not yet. They're going to be able to get theirs, and they did. But against Michigan and Iowa, two pretty, you know, Michigan obviously a good offense, and Iowa certainly a decent offense. Indiana held both of those opponents to under their point per possession average for the season. And if you just look at what Indiana has done through these first two Big Ten games in comparison to all the other teams in the conference, the Hoosiers are fourth right now in defensive efficiency, holding opponents to 0.965 points per possession. So This is something that we certainly were looking for coming into the season. Can this team be better defensively? And, you know, I feel like we've kind of seen flashes of it, but it hasn't necessarily shown up in the numbers, and we've seen teams have these big three-point shooting games against Indiana. But I really feel like the eye test says that Indiana's defense has been better. Like, they just look better to me, a little bit more in tune with each other, fewer breakdowns, fewer wide-open shots. And it's starting to catch up in the numbers, and I think that's a big development, because I don't think this team is necessarily going to be consistent offensively with guards who are inconsistent. And right now, I think it's tough to assume that Indiana's guards will be anything but inconsistent as we go through the season. So they're really going to need that defense to carry them through from game to game to give them a chance to win, especially in these tough road games coming up. So that's the other thing to me that has been a really good development, and considering the type of foundation that Archie wants to lay, I think a really encouraging one, especially this early in his tenure with players who, again, have not been used to the kind of accountability on defense that is now being asked of them.
Yeah, it's, you know, funny from kind of my perspective of where I, you know, see the game. I actually thought they were better defensively as a team against Duke than they were Iowa, if you can believe that. Duke, as you mentioned, is just so good. They have like pros at every position, basically. And I thought Indiana, the energy they brought that game defensively, I mean, they did some really good things. It was just Duke is so good that they couldn't stop them. And going back to what you said about them holding Iowa and Michigan under their point per possession average, I think they held Duke under their points per possession average too, and they still scored 91. That kind of gives you an idea of just how good Duke is. But The one thing that's still kind of missing from this whole defensive puzzle, and I think it's going to get figured out as time moves along with this team, is there's just too much slippage in terms of finding shooters on the perimeter. The Michigan game really kind of showed what can happen when you leave a guy wide open. We even saw it a little bit last night with Brady Ellingson, who had come in the game, I think, 20 points all season through 8 games for Iowa. He scored 16 last night, and several of those looks early in the second half were just wide open three-pointers. And so Indiana, as improved as they are with pressuring the ball and, you know, blocking shots around the rim, I think a little bit more gritty around the basket, they're still struggling to figure out just exactly how Archie wants them to cover the perimeter, and it's leading to a lot of uncontested shots. That's one thing they're going to really have to get cleaned up here in the next several weeks. I mean, I know they got these 2 games coming up here, but I feel like as important, obviously, as the Louisville and the Notre Dame game are, those 3 games that they have between where they have some extended time off to work as a team, and then they also have 3 games against opponents that they should beat, I think that's going to be a real critical time for this team to get better. And so I agree with, your overall take that the defense is starting to look better. I think if Indiana can just become a little bit better at challenging three-point shots, I know three-point field goal percentage defense is kind of a bad stat because there's so much luck involved in three-point shooting. There's if you go on Ken Palm's blog from a couple of years back, he kind of talked about how it was really one of the weirdest, hardest to predict stats. It's just so many different variables that feed into it. But, Indiana has allowed some guys this season, as I said, Poole and, Brady Ellingson, to kind of go off most recently. And they've got to stop those kind of things from happening, because really last night, I thought they kind of lost their focus early in the second half, and that allowed Iowa to get back into the game. And you do that against an Iowa team that's probably a bottom half Big Ten team, you can get away with it. But with some of the games coming up that they have later in the season, Michigan State, Minnesota, Maryland, teams like that, you lose focus like that and give up a lead, you may end up losing the game. And they were fortunate, I thought, last night that Iowa kind of got back in it and then really just kind of fell apart from that point.
We definitely need to talk about the Curtis Jones transfer, and there's a couple of other individuals that I want to ask you about too. Before we do that, I do want to remind everybody to go check out HoosierProud.com, an Indiana-based brand that is by Hoosiers and for Hoosiers. And one of the biggest changes for Hoosier Proud this season is that they now have licensed IU apparel. So, I mean, they've got all their, you know, the cool original designs, you know, based around Indiana themes that you know them for. They've got our Assembly Call shirts and the Inside the Hall shirts that are there as well. But their selection of officially licensed IU gear is really growing. So they've got some cool short sleeve shirts and long sleeve shirts with the script Indiana on it. They've got a cool soccer shirt if you want to support the men's soccer team. And of course, they have the two AJ Moye inspired t-shirts that we told you about last week. One that features the image of AJ blocking Carlos Boozer and another one that has the AJ Moye chant on it. So a lot to choose from for the Indiana fan in your life, whether you want to get one for yourself or maybe pick one up as a gift with Christmas coming around the bend. Or even if you're shopping for someone who's not an Indiana fan, but they're a proud Hoosier, like the guys who run Hoosier Proud, there's a lot of cool t-shirts to select there, to select from as well. So go to HoosierProud.com, check them out, and if you use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, then you will get 15% off your entire order. So not just one shirt and not just the Inside the Hall shirts, but you'll get 15% off that entire order. So again, HoosierProud.com, and the promo code is BRINK. So a couple more individuals, Alex, that are still on the Indiana roster that I want to ask you about and get your take on really quick. We have to talk about Colin Hartman, because I feel like it's not a coincidence that Indiana is making some of these improvements with Colin Hartman now back. And he's played in four games now. He came back in the Eastern Michigan game, only played 6 minutes in that game, but he's played 16 minutes, 20 and 20 in the Duke, Michigan and Iowa games, and has really made a big impact. Some of the impact can be seen in the stats. He's shooting 42% from downtown. He's been very effective as a rebounder, averaging 6 rebounds over the past 2 games, and he hasn't turned the ball over once. You know, and that's a number that we should probably talk about too, is Indiana's steadily decreasing turnover rate, which has been very encouraging. But you know, I just, there's something about when Colin's on the floor, you know, in addition to the production he provides, it really does seem to kind of settle guys down a little bit, and things just seem a little bit more solid. I mean, he was plus 29 in the Iowa game. It felt like when he was on the floor is really when things started to click, and he was really looking for his offense in that Iowa game too, which was nice to see. So I think, you know, maybe, you know, we kind of wondered, okay, what kind of impact can he really make? You know, a guy who scores 4 or 5 points. But, you know, there's probably a reason that Indiana's record with Colin Hartman in his career has been so much better than without him, where Indiana's basically just a 500 team without him. And to me, I feel like we've seen that. And I think, you know, his production is going up because he's kind of a little bit higher on the totem pole when he's in the game now, just with some of the losses in terms of personnel that Indiana's had over the last couple years. But the production combined with the leadership, you know, he's another guy along with Juwan Morgan that really is going to have to stay healthy for this Indiana team to have a successful season this year, because you can just see how big of an impact he makes for this particular group when he's on the floor.
I thought he was terrific last night, just really confident in his shot. I know he took, I think, made three of his 6 attempts from distance, but there was no hesitation when he caught those passes, and a lot of those, he just went right up with it. You see a lot of times with guys who are coming back, haven't played in a while, there's tentativeness, but we haven't seen any of that from Colin. And I think it kind of speaks to his confidence and what he's doing out there and his role in this team. He's never going to be your go-to guy offensively. He's never going to be maybe your most talented player on the court, but he's a guy who others can look to for confidence if things start to go bad, particularly as Indiana gets to go on the road here on Saturday against Louisville. He's a guy who is going to have to play well if Indiana wants to have a chance to win, because there's a lot of young guys who haven't experienced a lot of success on the road in their careers, and Colin is one of the few, along with Robert Johnson. Juwan Morgan obviously had a lot of success that year Indiana won the Big Ten championship, that really have had those experiences of what it feels like to go away from home and win. And so, you know, I'm you know, really happy to see for Colin as a person just how much fun it looks like he's having out there. You know, he's been through a lot. It would have been easy for him to say, hey, I'm done with basketball, I don't want to do this again. But He came back, I think, for the right reasons, to be a part of a team, to be a guy who can lead. And I think he's, you know, as important of a player as there is on this roster as the season goes along. And I'm just, you know, hopeful for him that he's able to stay healthy. And it was funny last night in the post-game press conference, he was asked a question about how he feels, and he knocked on wood before he answered. So you know, it's something, you know, I'm sure it's in the back of his mind, you know, staying healthy. But I think for the most part, he's looked really comfortable out there, looked like a confident player. And you just can't really put, you know, his statistical impact. People, you know, that don't watch the games closely or, you know, are casual observers of the team might think, you know, what's the big deal about this guy? But you just can't really put a price on having a guy out there who's been through what he's been through, not only in terms of what he's had to go through mentally with his injuries, but also just, you know, the different teams he's been on, the different guys he's played against. I mean, this is his fifth year of college basketball. He's an old guy on the block. He's seen everything. And he can be really, really valuable to the young guys, just to kind of give them guidance and be a leader on the court. So I think it's no coincidence, like you said, that Indiana's played better here recently with Colin on the court.
One other guy that I want to ask you about is Al Durham, who, you know, really one of the biggest storylines of the early season has been his emergence as a valuable player. I mean, he's still playing the third most minutes on the team behind Robert Johnson and Juwan Morgan. But I wonder if he's gotten exposed a little bit these last three games. You know, his first six games of the year, he had an offensive rating, you know, well over 100, up in the 130s and 140s, which just showed you how efficient he was. These last three games, as the competition has ratcheted up against Duke, Michigan, and Iowa, his offensive rating has been under 100. You know, he only had two turnovers in those first six games, and he's still not turning it over a lot, but he has had a turnover in each game. But to me, the most concerning thing is, you know, after averaging about four assists per game through Indiana's three games against South Florida, Arkansas State, and Eastern Michigan, he's only had one assist in these last three games, and that's over 66 minutes, which is a lot of time for a lead ball handler to be out there and not really be able to create opportunities for his teammates. Now, he's going to keep getting minutes because, you know, he's made some outside shots. He's actually made a three-pointer in five straight games, and he really tries to do things the way Archie wants him to do it, and he doesn't waste possessions. You know, but at some point against better teams, your guards have to make plays too, as opposed to just not making mistakes. And, you know, so I don't think by any means that Al's going to, you know, lose his rotation spot or anything like that, but, you know, his minutes have gone down a little bit in these games, and I just wonder if we're, you know, we're starting to see some of the limitations that he has as a freshman, which is, you know, totally fair. It's not really a criticism of him. He's already surpassed what we expected, but I just wonder if maybe now we're seeing some of those limitations as Indiana plays tougher opponents, and if Indiana's going to need, you know, either him to step up and become more of a confident creator, or, you know, if they're going to have to give some of those minutes to a guy like Devontae Green, who even with some of the turnovers and the mistakes, is still going to be out there and able to create and make plays that a guy like Al just hasn't quite shown that he's able to do yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would, you know, a couple things. One, he's a freshman, so, you know, just as much as I didn't get too carried away with how great he was early in the season, I wouldn't get too down on him based on his recent play. He's going to have his ups and downs. This is really his, you know, obviously his first season playing major college basketball. And, you know, even the best freshmen go through their rough patches of inconsistency. But even though he's not, you know, you mentioned the assist, I haven't watched him the last couple of games, and I've never thought he doesn't belong out there. Like he's a negative to the team. I just think maybe he's, you know, right now still trying to, you know, figure out his role in certain situations. You know, there's a lot of lineups being played with three guards. And I think as long as that continues to be the case, him, Robert Johnson, Josh Newkirk, and Devontae Green all have to learn kind of their chemistry out there on the floor together. You know, who's going to be the guy facilitating shots? One game it might be Newkirk and Durham hits a couple threes. The next game it might be Durham facilitating for Newkirk. I think a lot of a lot of it is these guys just becoming more comfortable with each other. And so with Al Durham, I would say the fact that he's played the third most minutes on the team, that really tells you the amount of confidence that Indiana's coaching staff has in him. And I don't think you're going to see a situation where he's losing minutes to anybody, especially with the decision of Curtis Jones to transfer. I mean, if Indiana's going to keep playing these three guard starting lineups, there's definitely room in the rotation for Robert Johnson, Devontae, Josh Newkirk, and Al Durham to, you know, play 25 plus minutes a game. And I think that's what we're going to continue to see moving forward.
So you mentioned Curtis Jones. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that was the other big story, that he has decided to transfer at the end of the semester. You know, I don't think it really came as a shock, you know, given how his minutes had dwindled. And I know a lot of us, me included, you know, talked a lot in the offseason about how this could be a potential breakout and how important it would be for Indiana if he could break out. And frankly, I thought he showed some signs in some of the exhibition games, and even, you know, early in the Indiana State game when he scored 11 points, where, you know, it started to look like, hey, you know, maybe this Curtis Jones breakout could happen. But, you know, it felt like after that, we really saw the Curtis Jones that we saw for most of last season, where he just didn't look confident, you know, really just seemed really unsure of himself. And, you know, I was really struck last night. They were showing the highlights of the Kansas game. And, you know, you see him, and, you know, he takes that three-pointer, and he got it and shot it so quick, and he's kind of, you know, backpedaling down the court, nodding his head, and just looked like a real confident guy. And you think back to that game when he had 15 points and was such an important part of Indiana winning that game. And I remember writing in our post-game email after that game, hey, we may have just seen the emergence of the next great guard at Indiana University. Because when you see a guy in his first game in that kind of environment shoot and score with that kind of confidence, given his high school pedigree, you're thinking, okay, we've really got something here. And so for the rest of his short time at Indiana to go like it went is really, I don't know, it's one of the more shocking, I guess, you know, personnel developments that I've seen, just because I think the hopes were so high and the ability that he flashed in a big game was so suggestive of what might come, and it just never came to be. To what do you attribute the Curtis Jones, you know, time at Indiana just not working out, to the point where when that was announced, I think the overwhelming conclusion was, well, that probably seems like it's in the best interest of everybody.
Yeah. It's never a good thing when your first game is, you know, we're what, 8 games into this, his second season, that he decided to transfer. So it's never good that over, you know, a sample of 35 plus games that the first game is the best you played, but that's really what happened in terms of his impact. I mean, he had that great game and then never really did anything beyond that to suggest that he deserved more minutes or earned more minutes. And I think this year specifically, he was given a pretty good opportunity, particularly early in the year, and he was 4 of 18, I think, on threes maybe this season. And he just never really clicked with not only, and I wouldn't necessarily say it was even a, you know, an Archie Miller thing. I mean, last year, I remember talking to him after the first Big Ten tournament game, I think against Iowa, he played pretty well. And, you know, I just kind of asked him about confidence, and he kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? I'm still confident. But I never really got the sense that he was confident in his role or his ability, for whatever reason. And then this year, it kind of just, once he didn't play in that Duke game and then barely got in against Michigan, it kind of seemed like, hey, you know, they're going to start playing Zach McRoberts a little bit because he's going to give them something a little bit more defensively. And I agree. You know, kind of the narrative is, you know, it's his best for both parties to move along. And, you know, if a guy envisions himself in a bigger role, and that's not really what is in store for him, you can't fault him for moving on to what could be a better situation for him. And for Indiana, I mean, Archie Miller doesn't really owe anyone anything in terms of minutes. I mean, it's been pretty well documented that everything is closely tracked in practice. They have the gold jersey. They have different metrics that they're tracking, and the minutes, I think, are assigned accordingly. And so he was playing as much as what he had earned, and clearly that wasn't good enough. And so hopefully, you know, a change of scenery will do him good, and Indiana maybe now can use the scholarship on a player who could be a better fit moving forward. But it, obviously disappointing based on just the game that he had against Kansas. But I think now the body of work kind of showed that that was way more of the exception than the rule when it comes to Curtis Jones.
Two more encouraging trends, Alex, that I want to comment on before we get out of here. You know, you look at last year, we know how big of a problem turnovers were. Indiana 322nd in the country in turnover rate, turning it over on 21.4 of their possessions. And after, you know, a bit of a rough start to the season with turnovers, Indiana's turnover percentage is now down to 17.4%. That's 83rd in the country. I mean, that is a quick change, obviously. And, you know, another number that has changed and that I think we all expected to, based on how Archie Miller's teams at Dayton played, is free throw rate. And free throw rate, you basically take your free throw attempts and divide it by your field goal attempts, and it essentially shows how often you're getting to the line. So you want a higher free throw rate because obviously that's more opportunities for free throws. You're getting the opponent in foul trouble, and it probably means that you're being aggressive and getting to the basket. Last year, Indiana was 217th in free throw rate at 34.1%. And this year, early in the year, Indiana's free throw rate is 39%, which is 84th in the country. And what to me is especially impressive about that is you took three NBA players off of last year's team, and now you're still getting to the free throw line more this year. I would have to bet that doesn't typically happen when you lose that level of professional talent off of a team. I would think that your free throw rate would typically go down. But here, Indiana, because of some of the changes in style and how they're playing, and guys like Juwan Morgan, you know, getting more minutes and more touches, those numbers are going up. And I think those are, in addition to the defensive numbers I talked about, you know, we know that part of the foundation Archie wants to lay is a team that doesn't waste possessions and a team that is aggressive, getting the ball into the paint, whether it's guards driving or getting it into the big men and getting to the free throw line. And we're now seeing, you know, like Indiana made more free throws than Iowa attempted, which is always a good formula for success. The only problem, the only caveat that I will issue here is Indiana didn't make as many free throws against Iowa as you would have hoped because their free throw percentage continues to lag. So the Hoosiers are only shooting 65% from the line, which is 287th in the country, and that is obviously being dragged down majorly by Deron Davis, who is shooting 45.2% and really kind of hit the nadir last night when he airballed that free throw. And clearly it's just in his head because Deron, you know, has a good-looking shot. He shot 75% from the line last year. But as we look at kind of, you know, things that need to continue, obviously the defensive improvements need to continue. Indiana needs to keep valuing possessions, keep getting to the line. But to me, one of the biggest things that has to change and improve moving forward for Indiana to win some close games, especially on the road, is Deron Davis, who's getting as many free throws you know, outside of anybody besides Juwan Morgan. He's got to start capitalizing on those because Indiana's offense runs through him. He's so effective down low, but people are just going to start fouling him. And so whatever is kind of going on mentally, you know, and I suppose sometimes you can't rush that. I mean, it's you know, he's got to just get that figured out mentally so his you know, muscle memory can just take over and shoot it without overthinking it. But that's got to change because he's going to have to be a guy who's making 70 to 75% of his free throws, I feel like, for Indiana to be able to win some of these tougher games against better competition. So some good trends there in the numbers, and then that one that really sticks out that I think is going to be huge as we look forward in this season for Indiana to be able to win some games.
Yeah, the turnovers, I think really it's just comes down to Indiana's not trying some of the ridiculous passes that became commonplace in previous seasons. They've kind of eliminated some of the high risk plays. You just kind of make the simple play and don't try to do too much, and usually you're going to get a high percentage shot. And I think that's kind of one thing that this team's finally starting to grasp. There was some obviously rough moments earlier in the season. There's probably going to be some games where they have higher turnovers, but Archie Miller's said consistently, you know, he wants them to be 10, 11 turnovers a game at the most. And for the most part recently here, they've stayed consistent with that. With Deron Davis, you just hope that this free throw issue doesn't snowball into something that's going to linger all season. You know, it kind of reminded me of, do you remember, you know, guys get different things where they just, it kind of bothers them from a mental perspective, where they almost like psych themselves out. Or, you know, remember the Cubs pitcher, John Lester, like he wouldn't throw to first base. Chuck Knobloch. You remember him, where he was like ground the ball and like throw it into the crowd. It was like, it's almost like you cringe because you feel bad for the guy because you know he can do it. He's shown, as you mentioned, he's got a really good free throw stroke, but then when he airballed the one and then followed it up with the brick, it's like, all right, he's really not where he needs to be mentally on this. And so different guys, I think, respond to those situations in different ways. I'm sure some guys like to talk to, you know, somebody, a sports psychologist or somebody that can kind of help them think through, you know, why is this happening? And other guys may just want to be left alone to figure it out on their own. You know, Colin Hartman mentioned post game last night that Duran looks great shooting free throws in practice. So there's obviously something that it's just kind of in his head at this point, as you mentioned. And you just hope that there's going to be kind of a line in the sand moment where he gets past this, because if he's shooting 45% from the free throw line when we get to January, you're going to have a situation where you can't have one of your most valuable players on the court in crunch time, and that creates a challenge that would be unfortunate, just because you know he's talented enough to knock him down. But you know, I think when you look at the free throw rate numbers this season compared to what last season was, it just kind of shows you how soft playing last year's team was. A lot of settling for three-point shots, not a lot of emphasis of getting the ball into the paint and getting to the line. And I mean, if you have, hypothetically speaking, you know, the more talent you have, the easier it should be to get to the free throw line, because you know, you've got players that can create a disadvantage and make the defense get off balance and commit fouls. But we've seen the exact opposite this year in terms of reversing the trend. And I think that speaks to just a different mentality and a different style attacking the paint and the rim. And so I think it's going to be something that is going to be really interesting to watch moving forward as more talent arrives in Bloomington. Is that going to be a staple of Archie Miller's teams? A really good free throw rate? I think it's going to be, because that's what he demands. He's not ever going to be a guy who's coaching his teams to make one pass on the perimeter and hoist a three. He wants the ball inside. And right now, getting the ball inside to Juwan Morgan and Deron Davis has been the best offense for Indiana.
You know, what's interesting about that, you know, Justin Smith has obviously had some really good moments this year, but his playing time has dwindled some lately. And a big part of that is Colin Hartman coming back. But I wonder if some of that also isn't the fact that Justin Smith actually has the lowest free throw rate on the team at 10%, which is not good. And considering some of the situations that he has found himself in with the ball down low in pretty good spots, you know, I have to think RG probably wants him to finish a little bit stronger and go up and get some contact and either finish through it or, again, get to the free throw line. I was really, you know, you look at all the individual numbers, and that's probably one of the ones that surprised me the most, just considering how often he's close to the basket and how often he's found himself in a pretty good position. But I know, you know, last night in the Iowa game, you know, he was 0-for-4, and a lot of those looks, you know, were down low pretty close, and he just hasn't really found a way yet to either score and or get himself in a position to get fouled so he gets to the line. And so that's where, you know, one of the reasons why his offensive rating is low. And I wonder if that isn't one of the reasons why he isn't playing more, because that is such a staple of Archie's teams, is getting to the free throw line and being able to finish strong down low. And again, Justin's a freshman. He'll learn. But I just wonder if at this point, if that's one of the reasons why his playing time isn't dropping a little bit.
Yeah, I would think that is the case. I mean, you've got when you're coming off the bench, you've got, you know, a limited opportunity to make an impact. You come into the game, you're going to be judged on what you do in those couple minutes, and the last couple performances for Justin Smith haven't been great. I think he's too talented of a player to continue playing like this. You know, you kind of remember back to, and I'm not comparing him to either one of these guys, but you remember back to, you know, the freshman seasons of OG and Juwan Morgan. You know, they started off somewhat bumpy the first half of the year, and as the year went along, they became more comfortable. They kind of blossomed into really good, solid contributors down the stretch. And you hope for Justin Smith that, you know, he kind of sticks with it, stays confident, you know, takes the coaching in a positive way, and turns you know, the struggles that he's having right now into something that he can actually use to make improvements as the season goes along. You know, the thing that, about him is, I think he's versatile enough to play multiple spots. He may be playing a little bit out of position right now, just kind of based on necessity on the roster. But like you said, he's got to do a better job when he's given the opportunity to play, finishing around the rim. I mean, it's not like Iowa had imposing shot blocking presence, and he really missed, I think it was something like four point blank shots last night. So he's got to do a better job of finishing if he wants to stay on the court.
Last question for you, Alex, before we get out of here. We mentioned Indiana's upcoming opponents. Louisville currently favored, these are according to KenPom, currently favored by 11, or expected to beat Indiana by 11. Notre Dame expected to beat Indiana by 9. It is conceivable, don't you think, that Indiana could lose both of these games? And I'm sure Archie will be disappointed, and he has made it clear that he's not interested in any type of moral victories in any of that. But from a fan and kind of an analyst perspective, isn't it conceivable that we could walk away from these two games, losing both of them, but still feel good or even better about the team, you know, if they're able to go into these situations and give themselves a chance to win, you know, by playing well over 40 minutes? Do you think that's possible, or, you know, have we reached a point now where we just need to be expecting wins? Like, how would you kind of coach IU fans on setting expectations for these two games?
I think it all comes down to how they play. If they play like they did at Michigan, then I think that's, you know, something to be disappointed about. If they play like they did against Duke, and like you said, Archie doesn't, he's not into the moral victory type things. But just from the eye test of Duke, I mean, they stood toe-to-toe with the number one team in the country for 36 minutes. If they do that, if they go into Louisville and play like that well, or if they play that well against Notre Dame, you know, they've got a chance to win one of those games. And I said before this five-game stretch, you know, this is a stretch where you could play well in five games and still lose four of them. I mean, these are good teams that Indiana's playing. It's almost going to get easier in a sense that some of these Big Ten games, I mean, there's not many road venues that they're going to go into that are going to be tougher than playing at Louisville. There's not going to be very many games they're going to play tougher than Notre Dame on a neutral court. I mean, these are, you know, I don't know that Louisville's still ranked right now after taking a couple of losses last week, but Notre Dame's a legitimate top 10 team that won the Maui Invitational. So I think a lot of it is just based on how do they come out and play and compete. Are they in the game challenging to win? At Michigan, they were never really in the game. I mean, they got down double digits early on and never really recovered, whereas in the Duke game, it was a different feeling because they actually had a chance to win. I mean, they were, you know, leading with, I think, 5 minutes to go, and ultimately kind of faltered down the stretch. So I think a lot of it depends on, you know, if you're losing by 15 the whole game and make a lot of threes at the end or something, and then you end up losing by six, that feels different than, you know, you're in the game for 36, 37 minutes on the road, say at Louisville, you know, it's a 3 or 4 point game and they make some free throws at the end and you lose by seven. I mean, it can, it's really, I base it on just looking at things like how well do they take care of the ball? I mean, did they play well defensively? Like, you know, what did the opposing team shoot from the field? How many offensive rebounds did they allow? You know, how were they on 50-50 balls? Were they kind of making the other team work for everything they were getting? And you just had a much better feeling about all those things in the Duke game than you did the Michigan game.
Yep. All righty. Well, we'll have a little bit of a layoff here because I'm actually going to be on a cruise next week. So I'll be getting back Tuesday. So I guess the first chance we'll get to record is Wednesday. So we'll definitely have something next week, but may not be early in the week on Monday or Tuesday like we sometimes get them out. But we'll definitely have something to recap the Louisville game and look ahead to Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. All right, Alex, thank you for your time. It's always fun talking IU basketball with you.
All right, thank you, Jared. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yep, talk to you guys next week. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.